This is the Decibel Geek Podcast with Chris Sinzak and Aaron Camaro.
Welcome back. Welcome back once again. Oh, yeah, it's time right now for the Decibel Geek Podcast. Ooh, we're going to have some fun today. My name is Aaron Camaro, joined as always by my awesome friend and kick-ass co-host, Mr. Chris Sinzak. I know you're as excited as I am about this.
Yeah, this is just the voice that you're about to hear alone is going to be a trip back in time, and then some of his stories are pretty awesome. Happy to have Charlie Kendall from the legendary Metal Shop on today.
The Butcher, the one and only, man, a pretty important piece of my young adultness. Oh, man, I'm stoked. We're going to talk to him for an hour plus, and he's going to tell us all kinds of amazing stories. This man is legendary in the pages of hard rock and heavy metal music as one of the most legit guys in radio that loved the music and wanted and fought to bring the music to the people, the hard rock and heavy metal. That's what we do here at the Decibel Geek Podcast, bringing it to the people just the way they like it. And when they like it a lot, man, they are driven to leave us reviews and recommendations, and hot damn, we got a couple right here today. So we're going to knock these out real quick and then get to the business. So here we go. This first one is a Podchaser review. It is all five pink stars. Heck yeah. And it goes a little something like this. I started listening years ago to Decibel Geek Podcast, and I became a huge fan right away. Aaron Camaro and Chris Sinzak really know how to keep you entertained while giving the fans some informative news and information about our favorite bands. Plus, they have the absolute best rock and roll game show in the world, Beat the Geek. Plus, they do Friday Night Live shows on their YouTube channel once in a while. And they give the fans the chance to interact with the show and get involved with it. And what a great couple of dudes. They also bring new rock and metal bands to the forefront to be heard by their fans. They really help support the lifeblood of our beloved genre, and we all love and cherish so much. Cheers to all the Decibel Geek Podcast friends and family. And that comes to us from our awesome friend Ray Kuhn. You know him from Dawn of the Rising.
That's awesome. Great to hear from him, and he actually spelled my name correctly. That's a rare occurrence.
That is pretty impressive right there. Hey, Ray, he's a smart guy.
Spell my name correctly. You're in, buddy.
You can tell they got a new album out in 2024. He's already angling for that top 10 at the end of the year.
Right, yeah.
Spelling your name right and everything. Woo-wee.
We'll take all the praise we needed.
Love it. Thank you, Ray. And yes, they do have a new album out, Dawn of the Rising. Check that out now. I guarantee you're going to love it. All right, so we got another one. That's weird. I don't see any stars.
But they elected not to give us any, apparently.
Okay, well, it's a review, and we'll take that. It goes like this. Decibel Geek is a great rock and roll podcast. They have a good mix of the dinosaur bands we all love and grew up with, but I also get turned on to a lot of new music through them, too, all while being funny. Check them out. That comes to us from BJ Wallace, right there on the Podchaser. Stars might be missing, but I feel all five in my heart after reading something like that. If you love the Decibel Geek Podcast as much as these fine folks love it, then take that time and give us a review or a recommendation. You can do it on Apple Podcasts, or you can do like these dudes did and do it on the Podchaser. And, of course, always that elusive Facebook recommendation. We love the five stars. If you hit them with all five, we're going to read it on the show to show our love and appreciation. Other folks we love and appreciate, well, top of the list right now, Pantheon Podcast, man. You wouldn't even be listening to this if it weren't for Pantheon Podcast. You might be listening to it, but we wouldn't have as much confidence in ourselves if not for Pantheon Podcast. Because when Pantheon was created, the idea was to go out and gather up all the best music podcasts available. There's like 4.2 million podcasts in the world. Pantheon only wanted the best music podcast to put under one platform, and so therefore, you send it out to everybody. Somebody says, hey man, I love Decibel Geek Podcast. That's a quality show. I wonder if there's any other quality shows about music that I love out there. Pantheon makes it easy for you. You just go to them. They've already curated the list of the best of the best of the best. And that's where you're going to find it. Pantheon Podcast supports Decibel Geek Podcast. Please support Pantheon on our behalf. Other people that love us and appreciate us, man, we got to give it right back to them. Every time we come out with a new episode, whether it's a GeekWire or it's something special like a 2-freaking-hour-long discussion about the band Warrant, ooh, a lot of people love that one. You know what I mean?
I did too.
It was a fun one to put together. Got a lot of great feedback on that. Thanks to everybody that took the time to check it out. And you know what? Whenever we come out with a new episode, no matter what it is, you're always going to see it out there on the socials. We got to let the people know. But we want to let as many people know as possible because it's a big rock and roll party. These are like invites we're putting out there for people to go, what is this? These guys are talking about Warrant for over 2 hours? I got to listen to this. Well, you guys help us out a lot with that. The fine folks that see our posts on the socials and they retweet them and they share them. Man, we see that. We know what's going on. We know who's helping us out. We put them on the list because we got to give them the love. Every week, the people that have shared and retweeted the previous week's episode, man, we got to name them Geeks of the Week.
Geeks of the Week this week are Adam Cox, Rock and Ron Runyon, Kristen Schimbeck, Mark Alden Taylor, Freeform Rock Podcast, Mark and Jerry BS Sessions, David Cathy, Ralph Vieira, Bill Wang, Will Honeycutt, Joseph Capone, Victor Ruiz, Brent Tibbetts, Pantheon Podcast, David Glenn, Mike Parnell, Aaron Baker, John Phillips, Tom Logsdon, Sit and Spin with Joe, Jeffrey Mendenhall, Shane Aber, Tony Smith and Obscuria Podcast, Denver D. Serrano, Shay Hargett, Rod Ramsey, Simon Catt, Derek Novak, Myra Chapman, Al Horta, Tom Smoke Belmondo, Jay Shabluski, Bill Elam, Eladio, Eric Senzak, Kevin's on Fire, Vet Halen, Whiting Guitar Works, Keith Rockford, Too Punk to Be a Podcast, Boris Petrovsky, Brad Owen, Focus on Metal Podcast, Craig Turditz, Sean Geek Podcast, Ray Kuhn, Cesar Atondo, Scott Crouch, and as always,
the Mooger Fooger. Oh, yeah, those are our people, man. I see a lot of new names on there that I've not noticed on here before. Man, you got to give it up for that Warren episode. Everybody sure loved it. And thanks for everybody that shared it and continues to share this show into the future. More eyes on it, more ears in it, more rock and roll. The world's a happier place. We're all making that happen together. Oh, man, I am so ready for this.
Yeah, very excited for this. And for all of you that are going to hear this, is yes, Metal Shop is back. It's got a broadcast schedule. Go to charliekendall.com and you'll get it.
Yes, do that right away as soon as you're done listening to this.
And also get a t-shirt.
I was just going to say, get yourself a Metal Shop t-shirt, man. I know I'm going to get me one of those. But here we go, man. It's time right now. We're talking to the man, the butcher, the creator of Metal Shop. The only show with teeth. And we're talking to Charlie Kendall right now on the Decibel Geek Podcast.
Metal Shop.
Heavy metal to me is a state of aggression, power, and self-independence.
Highest form of music there is in the entire world.
Loud music, great music.
It's wild, it's great. Fans are great.
Randy Rhoads is mint. He's the best guitarist ever lived.
Metal Shop is cool.
Nikki Sixx, he's the coolest.
Best music in the world.
Tonight on Metal Shop, Fastway singer Dave King and drummer Jerry Shirley give the feature interview.
Dave's little bottom attracts more female species.
We'll hear fresh metal from the new album by Canada's Helix, Walking the Razor's Edge. Y&T guitarist Dave Minichetti pays tribute to a father of heavy metal, Grand Funk Railroad.
Mark Farner would get on his knees, on his back, and really get out there and get crazy with the audience.
Twisted Sister's Dee Snider counts down his 5 favorite metal tracks of all time.
Are you
Judas Priest, KK Downing, answers a question from a Metal Shop listener.
Hi, everyone. This is KK Downing of Judas Priest.
This is Dee Snider from Twisted Sister.
All right, this is Dave Menichetti from Y&T.
Hi, this is Jerry Shirley from Fastway.
Hi, this is Dave King from Fastway, and I'll be coming to you on the Metal Shop.
You'll hear them all tonight on the show where you feel the noise. Metal Shop. I'm Charlie Kendall, and this is Metal Shop's third most valuable metal of the week, Quiet Riot.
Charlie, this is Aaron Camaro, my co-host. It's an honor from both of us to meet you.
Yeah.
Well, I've met you both, sort of, by watching your podcast.
Nice.
It's been very nice to watch you guys work.
Oh, thank you. Right. That's an honor to hear that.
Yeah, especially coming from you, Charlie. Man, when I was a kid, at the age when you're old enough to drive, but you're too young to go to the bars, I'm in a little town in central Wisconsin. We don't get no metal shop where I live, but me and my buddy, we'd hop in the car sometimes and drive 2 hours to go to Appleton, Wisconsin, just so we could hang out in a parking lot with a bunch of other rock and rollers that were underage and couldn't go to the bars, and drive around, try to meet girls, and listen to Metal Shop.
I think I was listened to more than probably any other radio host in a parking lot of a mall in the middle of the night.
100%. Yeah, 100% true.
You're probably responsible for some children, Charlie.
Yeah.
Well, it's possible. I'm not going.
Oh, man. So I've been in touch with Corey Harker, who's been a big help with the relaunch of Metal Shop. And He's been the guy. And I go back with him several years. So when I heard he was working with you, I was like, he's in good hands because Corey knows his stuff. He's a smart guy.
Well, it took him some doing to talk me into it because I had pretty much given up. I had said, you know, it's just not going to work. And it was fun. I had a great 11 years. It was a nice run. And I tried to start it again, but it, you know, nobody wanted to play. You know, along comes Corey, who refused to stop.
Nice.
Here we are, rolling. We're into our 18th show now.
Yeah, and so you've relaunched through KFRK, which is Ron Keel's media company. And if you don't know, the RFK stands for Ron fucking Keel.
That's it.
And that's a great combination of people there. We've worked with Ron ourselves in the past, and he's a super professional guy, not only talented, but one of the hardest working people I've ever met in my life.
Oh, he does. He doesn't stop. He's nonstop 24/7. He's working on 4 albums right now.
Wow.
Simultaneously? Holy shit.
Yeah, I mean, he's working on 4 albums. His, you know, a Keel one, and I think a solo one, and then 2 other bands that he's also recording. So
right on. Yeah.
He's been a busy fellow lately.
Yes, he has, that's for sure. And while we're on the subject of the new version of Metal Shop, Charlie Kendall's Metal Shop, KRFK Radio, Saturday 7 Eastern, Wednesday 11 Eastern, New HD Media, Monday 7 Eastern, Metal Shop Monday, 5 hours. First hour is a new show, then Classic Metal Shop after that. Friday 7 Eastern, Sunday 11 Eastern, also 97 Underground, Monday 4 Eastern, and WCST-FM Charleston, can't speak, Sunday at 7 Eastern.
Yeah, that's the new actual broadcast station.
Yeah, and I wanted to get that out first because, you know, we're in more of an on-demand society, so, you know, you got to catch it when it's actually on, so like the old days, and listen to it that way. But it's so great that it's back. And now, like you said, you had kind of stopped because a couple years ago I was reaching out to you trying to get you to come to Rockin' Pod here in Nashville because I'm like, Charlie would be treated like a king.
You did? That was
you. It was
you.
Me.
Yeah, I remember that conversation.
And Charlie comes back and goes, I am most undoubtedly retired, and but thank you for the offer. And then a year and a half, 2 years later, here we are, Metal Shop relaunching. So I hope you'll come to Rockin' Pod next year when we do it in 2025.
Yeah,
well,
that'd be
you
awesome.
Were probably in my back of my mind when I first started to do. I had nothing to do, so I did a podcast, and it was based on some old interviews and different stuff that I had, and I just did it fooling around in my studio and put it out, and there was response.
Yeah,
and that led me to getting more shows because I couldn't buy the old Metal Shop shows. They had thrown them away. They threw them in the garbage.
Oh.
585 shows.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, I mean, that was then Clear Channel, now iHeart. And when they bought MJI, we said, what is this shit? And they threw it away.
Damn.
It was all in storage, and all the original interviews and the 8-track tapes and the mix downs and the 2-tracks and the CDs, all gone, all of it. And I had a 100 or so shows that I had kept over the years. And then New HD wanted more because they wanted to run more. So I started looking for them, and that's how I ran into Corey. Because Corey's got some Metal Shop.
Yeah, I have no doubt. He's probably got most of them, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
Nice.
And he ended up sending me a bunch, and then we started talking. And then he introduced me to Ron, and suddenly, here I am. It was that simple.
Right on.
Yeah.
When did you know that you had a voice for radio? It sounds like, I read up that you got started as early as 14, but like, did you know you had a gift for it really, really young?
No, not at all. I've been attracted to radio since I got the transistor, and it went under my pillow when I was about 11 or 12 years old. The summer of my 12th year, there was a job opening at a local TV repair shop, Fitz's Radio and TV Repair, and they were looking for a tube caddy. You got to know, this is 62, 63. And I carried the tubes around in a big box for old Mr. Fitz, and we repaired radios and televisions all over town.
Wow.
And that was my first ever job.
Where is this? Where'd you grow up?
Clarksdale, Mississippi.
Okay.
Yeah, a little bitty town, but lots come out of there. Buddy Waters.
Home of Morgan Freeman, isn't it?
John Lee Hooker, yeah. Who was?
Isn't Morgan Freeman from there?
Morgan Freeman is actually from Charleston, Mississippi.
Oh, okay.
But he lives there now. Well, actually, Morgan's got houses all over Hell's Africa. But one of them is also in Clarksdale. He moved there with a friend of mine I used to play basketball with, an attorney. And he came there with Bill Luckett a lot and ended up moving there. Then he couldn't get into the, you'll love this. This is, 2024. This was maybe 5-10 years ago. He couldn't get into the country club, and they had the best meals in town, or pretty much in all of North Mississippi. So he couldn't get in. So he built a restaurant and hired the chef from the country club.
Oh, wow.
Nice. And had himself a restaurant. And then as he's there more and more, he got a house. And then he decided to build the biggest blues club in North Mississippi. And he did. And it's right there now. And it's called Ground Zero. It's a great club. Great food, catfish, fried chicken, gumbo, all kinds of stuff. And bands come from all around to play there. I think Bonnie Raitt's even played in there. Buddy Guy plays in there a lot. But it's a great place.
I never imagined we'd get a Morgan Freeman story today when we started this, but that was awesome.
I like it. I like going all over the map. That's fun.
Well, when I was 14 and learned to play guitar, I was 14 and I had just been playing in football between 12 and 14 in peewee football, where it doesn't matter how big you are.
Uh-huh.
And I would hit anything. I don't care if they weigh 300 pounds. I weighed 98. I would hit them. But when you get to be about 14, all of a sudden there is a 350-pound guy with lots of muscles, and I'm not hitting him. So I said, I think I need to learn how to play guitar, because I'm not going to be playing football after the game, during the game. So I'll play after the game, and that's what I did. I learned to play guitar from a guy named Jack Johnson, who is a noted blues guitarist. He was a bass player at the time. with a band called Frank Frost and the Nighthawks, a three-piece combo. Frank Frost played guitar, Jack played bass, Sam, I forget his name, played drums, and the three of them, they played all over. And I was basically Jack Johnson's white roadie. The only way I could get into the juke joints, you know, in the mid-60s, yeah. You know, and people would look at me, and Jack would say, leave that boy alone. And that was it. You know, nobody bothered me, and I got to feel it, yeah. Not just see it or learn it. And I would rent Jack's guitar during the week, Monday through Friday. I would rent his guitar for $1 a day. It was a Sears Silvertone bass and amp. I rented it for $1 a day. He would show me a riff. I would bring it back, pay him. He would make me play the riff, and then he would tell me what I was doing right or wrong. And that's how I learned to play.
Wow.
And Jack went on, and he did very well. He's gone now, but, man, he was a good one. I don't know how we got to that story either, but we did.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Well, with radio, and well, for my personal memory of getting into Metal Shop, for me it was 96 Rock in Atlanta was where I used to listen to it. And listened to it, I think it was every Saturday night on that station. Then I moved to Nashville, and then KDF had it for a while, and it was on Sunday nights. But, yeah, it was, I mean, you know, back then you didn't have the internet. You had magazines like Hit Parader, Rip, Metal Edge, and you had your show.
Cream,
that's right. But then there's also the other shows like Rockline with Bob Coburn. Was there competition between Metal Shop and Rockline back in those days?
No, there was no real competition in that field. Mm, right. When I decided that there had to be a hard rock heavy metal show, there was nothing.
Right.
There was zero competing with us. And that's what I had a hard time convincing the networks to take the show. And many of them were sorry they didn't take it, but MJI took it after the producer that I had sent two guys around, a guy named John McGann and another guy named Denny Somek, both of whom were great, great producers. And I sent them, I said, go find, find us a syndicator who will distribute this show. And John said, Josh Feigenbaum at MJI is interested, but he's not convinced. I said, Judas Priest, they're playing Friday night at Madison Square Garden. Take him there.
Yeah.
That's it. It was over. End of discussion. Yeah. You know, he saw what was happening. He said, yeah, there's something happening here. What it is very clear. I'm sorry.
So before that, I mean, so you see it before anybody else. Like, you see that there's a market for a radio show for hard rock fans. When did you come to that realization? Is it because you saw so many people were into it, or is it because you were into it?
I was known when I first got into radio at 14 years of age as B-Side Charlie.
Nice.
Because the B-side of For Your Love by the Yardbirds was I'm a Man. I liked I'm a Man. Oh, my God, I'm sorry. I put on the wrong side. And I put it on the little top 40 station there in Clarksdale. And I would do that on occasion. You know, and you had Mystic Eyes, and you had Summertime Blues from Blue Cheer. There's all this incredible, basically, hard rock, verging on metal, if you look at Frigid Pink and other things of that nature, that all came out 66, 67, you know, and that's where the birth of metal is, to me, much more so than even Sabbath, but that's just my opinion. So I liked all of that to begin with. When I got to New York to WNEW, they played a whole lot of Poco, and they had less than a one share point. Less than 1% of the people in New York City were listening to WNEW.
And the math checks out on that.
Well, I said, here's the deal. You don't play enough rock and roll. You want anybody between 18 and 34, you got to play some fucking rock and roll. You know, and they didn't play ZZ Top, you know. And I said, where's Smoke on the Water? And it wasn't there, you know. And I'm like, so I fixed all that. And boom, you know, it got up to about a 5 and all was well. But getting there, I knew it was about to happen. It was about to explode. And it was the right place at the right time. And I just happened to be the guy who had a fondness for that kind of music. I still do.
That's awesome to know that it comes from you and you appreciating the music.
Oh, yeah. It's like Corey and I throw music back and forth more so than I did with the guys at MJI. I basically had the idea, gave it to John McGann. We formatted it and then gave it to MJI, and they kept that basic format through the whole 11 years.
One thing that Aaron and I kind of are interested in is like kind of the nuts and bolts of how the show would get put together every week. Like, was it a one-man show? Was there a crew of people, like certain people would do interviews, and how did it all work?
MJI was a corporation. Mm-hmm. You know, they were a syndicated company. They were sold to Clear Channel, you know, iHeart, for $68 million. There were like six or seven people working on my show.
Right.
You know, and I was the boss of the biggest rock station on the planet. I don't have a whole lot of time to go out, you know, and say hello to bands. I was notorious enough without getting into that. And if I meet someone and we have an affinity to hang out together, I'm going to get in fucking trouble. You know, and it was just always been that way. And I avoided getting into that situation for that reason, that I'll end up hanging around with them until 6 in the freaking morning and then have to go to work. Or I'll find out that I don't like them. You know, yeah. Meeting your heroes is not an easy thing to do. You guys have done a lot of interviews. You know, sometimes people just aren't what the fuck they seem to be.
Oh, yeah. I can think of one person in particular right off the top of my head.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Who's been a guest on Charlie's show several times.
I have no idea. Yeah. I'm staying out of it.
Just one Vinnie Vincent.
Ah! Yes. Well, Vinnie's crossed a few paths and pissed off a lot of people. But, hey, yeah. I'm glad he's doing okay.
In a manner of speaking.
Metal Shop is brought to you by Budweiser. For all you do, this Bud's for you.
Metal Shop.
Hi, this is Vinnie Vincent of the Vinnie Vincent Invasion. I'm tonight's special guest host on Metal Shop. And if my name sounds familiar, you either seen it on the side of a post office wall as a wanted criminal, or you see me play lead guitar with Kiss. But now I've got my own band called the Vinnie Vincent Invasion. And before I forget, Charlie Kendall asked me to tell you that he'll be back next week, but for now, you're all mine. I was checking out Metal Shop last weekend and heard Alice Cooper guest hosting the show. Now I've got a tough act to follow, but I promise that tonight you're in for a total metal invasion. And here's what's coming up in the next 60 minutes.
There's a few little metal shops that are on YouTube you can pick up, you get bits and pieces of them. But I was listening to one from 88 with it was an interview with Vinnie Vincent Invasion. And but I just love the way
that's
the show.
That's a shitty copy of it too, though.
Oh, it's the sound quality.
It's like recording on a tape recorder off the radio.
Yeah. No, I'd love to hear pristine copies. I'm gonna have to I'm gonna have to beg Corey to send me some of the old stuff.
He has, you know, whenever I complain about something, he goes, "Oh, I got that," and suddenly there it is. I've got it, a clean one.
My heart breaks a little bit just at the idea of that kind of stuff getting thrown in a dumpster somewhere.
Oh, I know. I was ready to pay for it. Would have paid for it. I would have borrowed money to buy the library because I know what's in there, and there was nothing, you know. And when I talked to the president of Premier, the syndication wing of iHeartMedia, they are the syndicators now of everything, and they would own it now. So I talked to the president, and I said, "I want to buy the thing. I can't. It's gone. You know, it's really literally gone." I said, "Well, I'm going to get as many as I can, and I'm going to give them to this station that's on the air for autism. You know, for New HD Media." Their whole thing is they hire autistic people. And they're a 501c charity group. I want to give it to them. And I did. You know, everything that I've had goes to them. And she said, well, Charlie, all I can tell you is they didn't want it. Okay? Do what you have to do. And that was it. So I figured, okay, I guess that'll be all right. You know, because it's kind of shaky as to who owns rights to what when it gets down to it. You know, but so I just gave it to them. And, you know, if they want to take on a charity group, go ahead. Let them take them.
One thing that was always repeated several times throughout the show that I think I had just straight burned into my memory was 666 Fifth Avenue, New York, New York, 10103. Like you would hear that every week multiple times. Was it a happy coincidence that that was the address, or was that really the address?
It was a happy coincidence. In the first show, they had rented a studio because they didn't have any studios at MJI. They had like five or six syndicated things, but they didn't have a studio to really record clean voice. Well, people would, you know, record it at their radio station and then send it to them. That's really what was happening. And so they rented a studio, and I'm sitting there and I'm looking over the scripts, and I got down to that. I went 666, and I went, wait a minute, retake. And when I did, I went 666 Fifth Avenue, you know, and it stuck, and people cracked up on the place because nobody had realized it until it came out of my mouth that was a thing.
Wow. So awesome to hear you say it.
Well, you know, you mentioned the original tapes getting destroyed or thrown out. I'm sure you're more than familiar with the infamous Casey Kasem rant audio where they got him behind the scenes doing reads and he just loses his temper. Is there any tapes maybe buried somewhere of Charlie Kendall just going off?
Mm-hmm. The people, my producers and the engineers and writers, et cetera, at MJI produced every year Charlie Kendall's outtakes and played it at the Christmas party every year. And I was astounded at some of the things I said. And I would get, you know, I would go. It was just like Casey Kasem. I mean, when you're in there, you're trying to find a zone to communicate, you know, a whole concept into words and shove it in the air. It's you have to focus. You have to, you know, you have to be focused. You have to stay on point, and you've got to know what the hell you're talking about. And it's got to come through that you know what you're talking about. And if something gets in the way, I could occasionally, you know, go off. But I heard that that was a staged tape.
Yeah.
Oh, don't tell me that.
Bullshit. Bullshit. I know this craft, and I know the people that do it. You know, it's, you know, that wasn't staged. That was the
real deal. No, it sounded very real.
You know? And I heard Dick Clark could go off better than anybody.
Yeah.
I'd love to see that.
Yeah, I could too, but I never met Dick.
Oh, that's funny.
Had a great time in his town in Philadelphia, though, for 4 years.
Oh, yeah. You mentioned the Rolling Stones, and Corey made sure to tell me to have you relay a awesome Keith Richards story you supposedly have.
In 1989, it was the first Rolling Stones farewell tour. That's 1989. They're not...
Yeah.
So ABC hired me to interview them for a couple of one-on-one interviews, one with Mick, one with Keith. The one with Mick was in a studio and very clinical, and, you know, it was good. Mick was the best I've ever seen him in terms of really giving answers. And he didn't beat around the bush, and he didn't get sidetracked, which I had 30-something questions, and I ran out of questions before my time was up. I had to ask the crew, all right, anybody got a question for the Rolling Stones? Because there was nothing there. And anyway, we came up with more, and we got through it. With Keith, it's backstage before their performance at Shea Stadium. There's a table. There's Bill German, who's their, you know, publicist, the guy who publishes their magazine, the Rolling Stones magazine. And I forget, another guy from ABC and me. and a bottle of Rebel Yell. And Keith and I go one-on-one with this bottle of Rebel Yell. We finish it within the hour. We shake hands. We go, you know, he goes upstairs. We get everything wrapped up. I go upstairs after him. And I had really good seats, and I'm looking out, and I'm watching the show, and I'm starting to get the whirlies. Oh. And about halfway through the three-hour show, I'm like, I got to get on a train and go back to Philadelphia. You know? So I had stumbled out of my seat, got back on the train, and went on back to Philadelphia. But during the interview, the most amazing thing to me was a story that's been repeated many times by Keith. The thing is, it's been told many ways. That night, Keith's story was, he was playing a gig with Chuck Berry, and he looked at the guitar, and Chuck told him, don't touch my guitar. And they're walking down the hallway later, and he reaches up to grab his shoulder and grab the guitar instead. And Chuck turned around and popped him right in the face.
Oh.
And Keith said, I grabbed the walls. I grabbed everything because I wasn't going to go down. And I didn't. And I said, did you bleed? He said, not telling. And that was it, you know. And the way he told it on the Tonight Show or something was different from that. You know, it's a little bit more refined and sophisticated and not so back alley, but I can see the back alley with Chuck Berry and Keith Richards.
Don't touch my guitar.
Don't touch my guitar. Real simple.
Yeah, Chuck Berry seemed like a frightening person to me. Very talented, but wouldn't want to cross him.
No. He had to be tough in those days.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to imagine what it's like. First of all, you're working for Chess Records to start with. And they robbed everybody. You know, it wasn't like he was picked out. They robbed everybody, and they did. But they also helped everybody. And eventually, it all worked its way out. But Chuck, in order to be, you know, to be the guy he had to be, when you were playing the Chitlin circuit in the 60s, you're playing some juke joints that there's nothing but, you know, sawed-off shotguns, 38s, and razors in people's shoes. So you had to be tough.
Yeah.
Even up until last time I saw him was, I think it's like early mid 80s in Philadelphia. He comes in. I was going to be at that show. And I was there at the club, and he came into the office with the owner, and he said, okay, where's my money? And I put the money down. He counted it. $10,000 is, you know, mid-80s. $10,000 cash. Put it back in his pocket. Said, okay. Says, where's the band? Downstairs. He went. That was it, you know. And the thing that got me was how much business he was there. You think of Chuck Berry on stage anytime you've ever seen him live or filmed. I mean, he's on. He's magical. Yeah. He's Chuck fucking Berry.
Yeah,
and
there
aren't many guys like that, you know? I mean, when he comes out and does a show, you always see a smile on his face, other than when Yoko started singing that one time on the Mike Douglas
legendary show.
That was a classic and a half.
It's the greatest facial expression.
It was.
Time.
What the fuck?
Yeah, and he summed up what everyone else was feeling.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Except John. Yeah.
Except John. Yeah. John loved it.
Yeah.
God bless the guy that turned off her microphone.
Oh, man. Yeah, I was watching the Beatles, the Let It Be Disney series that came out a couple years ago, and there's all this footage, and part of it was Yoko starts yelling, and then Paul McCartney jumps on drums, and then John Lennon's doing, and they're just making this ridiculous noise for like 10 minutes. And they left all of that in the movie, which was weird.
Yeah.
And then I made a post on Facebook, and I'm saying, watching as this happens, thinking, I wonder if John Lennon's on drugs. And then at the end of the song, John Lennon goes, I think that should be on the album. I'm like, yep, he's on drugs.
Metal Shop.
Tonight in the feature interview, lead singer Mark Tureen of today's hottest new band, the Bullet Boys, tells why less is more when it comes to playing hard, driving rock and roll.
The less you possibly can do, and the more in that stanza or in that certain part of the song, you can just come out and just nail something. People go, whoa.
But I listened to an interview you did with our buddy Chris Aiken recently and Neely, and you did seem to get a little fired up about the Communications Act of 1996, and I'm guessing that was a huge part of what ended up killing off Metal Shop in general, right?
Well, Metal Shop, it was coming before the Communications Act. I mean, once corporations saw that they could own these stations as real estate with no knowledge or comprehension of what the hell they actually were or of anything in the Communications Act of 1934, I'll use the original, meant it was going to go south because all they were there for is the money. That's all most of them are there for today. The ones who are actual broadcasters, most of them are still in business. Most of them are still profitable because they haven't lost the essence of what it was. You know, the stations that are a part of their community, the stations that really work the town, work the audience, and become a part of the fabric of the community they're in, they're going to be there as long as there are retail outlets. I went into Kohl's yesterday, had to return something from Amazon. And you go to Kohl's to, you know, hand it to them, and then they send it back and refund your money. I go in there, and it's like a Monday afternoon. There are, I don't know, 10 or 15 employees in a big-ass store and one other shopper besides me. And I'm going, what's going to pay for this?
Yeah.
Brick and mortar is in a deep shit creek. It's, you know, they're... It's horrible out there, you know, because you can get everything you want right in front of your face and order it. It's there. Yeah.
I was talking to my kid the other night, and we were talking about Metal Shop and how excited I was to get to talk to you, and told him that story about driving 2 hours to listen to a radio show.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, you can see it don't really register with him. And it's like, well, that was a different time when everything had an appointment time to it. You know, there was no going back and listening to it if you missed it. So if it was like a televised event, you had to be there. You know, if it was, for example, here in Metal Shop, you had to go. You had to get to where you could hear it to hear it, because once it was gone, it's gone, you know, and that changed everything. And radio became like McDonald's. You know, I worked on radio for years. And I remember when it starts changing, you know, when all of a sudden it's all on the computer and it's all the set playlist and you don't dare change none of that. Man, I got in trouble so much when I worked on radio. This is like early 2000s, where it was the last chance any kid DJ that wanted to sneak in his own CDs and play some cool stuff and sneak it in and get away with it. It was the end of an era for that stuff. And then it's like, we're going to take away the morning show that's a part of the community, and we're going to pipe in this other show that's, you know, comes from wherever. Yeah. And it lost connection with the people there. And, like, I always remember I played a song off of Ace Frehley's 1978 solo album one time, and the phone lines lit up. And I know I'm not supposed to be playing that, but I did it anyway. It was a deep cut off the album. And the first line is, I can't believe you're playing this, man. That's amazing. And then the next line is, oh, my God, I don't think I've ever heard this on the radio. And the next line is, dude, this is amazing. And the next line is, this is your boss. What are you playing right now? And I'd go, well, sir, it's a song off of Ace Frehley's 1978 solo album. And you wouldn't believe, I just got a whole bunch of phone calls and people really like it. And he's like, I'm going to need to see you in my office tomorrow morning. I'm like, oh, and I'd get in trouble for that stuff. But people loved it, you know, would love to hear something different, but it's just select people now, I think. You know, there was a time when it was so popular that everybody loved it. But then we got to the point where fads change and they come and go. And
that's
most
what they did
people,
in the early 90s.
Yeah, most people are going to just go with whatever the fads are.
When grunge came around and the alternative and grunge came around, the radio consultants were telling the people at MJI, you got to stop saying metal. You can't say the word metal. It's offensive. And I'm going, who the fuck is it offensive to? You know, tell them not to listen. They got a choice, you know. But that was the way it was. I mean, and that's what killed the show eventually, because they ended up compromising, and I was there on the shop. You know, and the last show was what, Nirvana? Or was it Slash? I forget now. But it really, you know, drifted completely off of target. They changed the formulas. They changed the elements of the show and different things like that. And the show went from 250 stations to 60, you know. And I said, that's it. Hey, look, you're going by. We're going to be off the air any minute now. I'm going to go leave now because I don't like what we're doing anyway. So that was that. And I think they tried for a couple of weeks with some guest host and gave it up. You know, that was it. But now we got Eddie Trunk. Eddie does a good show.
Yeah.
You know, Eddie does a good show. D. Snyder, who's the motherfucker who named me the Butcher because his brother was one of my producers. And he used to complain to D about how I butchered his scripts. And so he's doing a promo for me, and he comes out with that, the Butcher, and it stuck. You know, and I'm going, yeah, sure, okay. I can live with that. That's fine.
And
I love D. D's a good man. You know, I like him. He's a good dude. As he says, he's a great shouter. You know, and he is.
He's a natural born entertainer. No matter what he tries, he's great at.
Well, the other thing on KRFK that got me interested in that was, you know, I didn't know Joe Elliott had a radio show. You know, I guess that's not on anywhere else except that station in the U.S. Is anybody carrying it? I don't know.
I just know of just Ron's station where I've heard of it being on there.
Yeah, it's good. You know, the other shows he has on there are all quality shows. They all have elements of authenticity about them.
Right.
That's what I like about Ron. That's what I like about his radio station. And that's what I like about working with this group of people. Is the authenticity, and there's not a lot of that around in the broadcast game, be it internet or over the air.
Authenticity seems to be a four-letter word in a lot of mainstream media. So it's like what's worked before? Let's do that. That's pretty much it. You know, they don't tend to want to break new ground, it seems. And actually, I want to give a shout out to our buddy Lonnie. Who hosted a show here in Nashville that was very much patterned on what Metal Shop did.
Yeah.
And local FM station here took him off the air, but he did a great job. It was called Metal Works.
Yeah.
And very much reminded me of your old show. And we appeared on the show to promote the expo. And while we were there, we're walking out and we go by Studio A there and it's empty, and you're hearing the guy talking, and I'm like, is it all automated now? He's like, pretty much. Yeah. Just about everything is automated.
You can walk down the hallway of any radio station in America at high noon and see about four people, and there are six stations there, you know, and most of those are salespeople and secretaries.
I'd be at a party on a Saturday night, and somebody would say, hey, man, you're on the radio, or you'd be talking to a girl and saying, hey, yo, I'm Aaron. That's me. And they're like, no, it's how can that be you? You know, like, damn it.
It's true.
I hated it.
I heard you mention in a recent interview that you've been friends with Artie Kornfeld since 1982. Oh, yeah, we got to go down to Florida and interview him last year about Woodstock. And amazing character, Artie.
Artie is a force of nature unto himself. He is. Sir, he's astounding. I think right after his visit to Philadelphia that lasted, I think, a week, I think he went and got sober. We had some fun.
Oh, I believe it. And yeah, we did the interview and it was nice and proper and had good stories. And then we finished the interview and then he just kept going.
Oh no.
And it was just like, and then the stories got crazier and crazier. Yeah. But he'd be saying it so matter of fact, like he's waiting on a bus.
Yeah.
And like, oh yeah, here's what I did with Mick Jagger that night. And Paul McCartney took me out and hooked me up with this girl. And I'm like, slow down, you know.
It's all real.
It's crazy.
Yeah, he was an awesome guy to be around. So when we talk about like the downfall of radio, in a lot of ways, because the authenticity, especially in rock, and the radio connection goes away and it becomes so sanitized, it really gives birth to podcasting. And especially we're talking about rock podcasting, what Chris and I do, what so many of our friends that we've made over the years do, what all the guys that go to Rock and Pod do. How do you feel about that? You know, being a professional radio man, to see that now anybody can start a rock music podcast.
That's great.
Yeah, you like that.
Why could that? That's no problem. Anything that's good will rise.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. If you're good and you get out there and you continue to deliver, you're going to be okay. You'll be all right. The tough thing we have now is, I'm sure you know, is making money. You know, it's hard to make a living. I mean, even though there's a lot of vision that we have with what we do, that people think that, oh, he's a star. Bullshit. You know, I'm a disc jockey. I'm an old disc jockey. And I did make a lot of money, you know, and I got a little of it left. And that's that, you know. In the meantime, you know, I still got groceries to pay and da 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 da. But, you know, the whole thing now that fascinated me was how hard it is to find advertisers. They should be in the all over this. I don't know why they're not. Because advertising, Madison Avenue, if you will, has always generated toward hot mediums. What is the hot medium? What is the hot thing? You know, when FM came out, we had waterbeds on the air and we had head shops. All of a sudden, the ratings went through the roof and we're advertising Cadillacs. That's the way it was, you know. But I don't see any of that really happening in podcasting, and it should be. You know, Ron Keel was the first one to tell me he thought that we should get Craftsman to be the sponsor. Craftsman's Tools brings you, you know, Metal Shop.
Oh, that makes total sense.
And I'm perfect. Like, fuck, that's great. What's wrong with that? He said, they won't give me an answer. And I'm going, okay. You know, but it's like, who do you get to for that? What division, you know, just handles, you know, internet or social media or whatever the hell we call what we do? I don't know.
And it might be one of those things where somebody comes to somebody that makes a decision like that and says, hey, you know, we got this podcast. We think it'd be a perfect connection for you guys to be a part of this. And he goes, oh, podcast? My nephew does a podcast. And so there's so many people that do it, it makes it seem inferior. They're like, oh, this, my goofy cousin does a podcast. Because anybody can do it.
Well, and that's okay. I think that's fine. If I were an advertiser, you know, I would find a way to cultivate a group of podcasters who were showing promise. And then find the ones out of it, you know, by giving them $100 a month or whatever, you know, to sponsor into a big push where you're getting millions. I mean, but I don't think anybody in advertising thinks that far ahead, you know?
Well, we're on a music podcast network ourselves.
Right. And we're grateful for Pantheon.
I'm not sure. Is that the one where it's like a club? You have to join and pay money and then you can see special things?
No, that's Chris Sinzak's OnlyFans account.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Where you pay for me to keep my clothes on.
Patreon, that's what I'm thinking of.
Oh, yeah, okay.
We also do a Patreon. It's a small following, but it's cool, and it's extra content for them. But no, we're on a network called Pantheon Podcast Network. It's a music podcast network.
Okay, well, I'll have to look them up.
Yeah, do it.
I'll send you some info.
I know Ron's on Patreon, and
yep. Ron's the king of Patreon.
Yeah, yeah, I think he does pretty well with that. We've talked about offering up the new Metal Shop shows, you know, in a subscriber type fashion. You know, I'm not sure how that's all going to work. It's like, you know, I want to push, and I want to push hard, but I don't want to push Ron too hard. Because he's got so much on the table, and his heart and soul is the music. I mean, and you gotta love him for that, you know. And sure. I don't want to get in the way or get in between him and his music. I think that's a bad place to be, and I don't want to be there. So I'm waiting until he can, you know, find his way through this, and then we'll see if we can push ahead in different ways of getting the show. I mean, at this particular moment in time, the only revenue stream we have is Metal Shop T-shirts. If it weren't for Metal Shop T-shirts, I couldn't pay my electricity bill.
Everybody listening to this, go get you a Metal Shop T-shirt.
I'll be getting one for sure, and I'll put the link to it in the show notes for this episode, because I want to help any way I can.
The link to everything is at charliekendall.com. It's all nice.
Now, it's time for Rock of Ages, where a hot new hard rock artist can pay tribute to his favorite metal musicians. Now, tonight in the studio, we've got Klaus Eichstätt, lead guitarist with the eccentric new California band Ugly Kid Joe. Now, instead of talking about an artist that he listened to while growing up, Klaus wanted to discuss a band that he admires now, Metallica. All right, Klaus, tell us why you chose them.
I just say Metallica because they're like one of the first bands, probably in a long time, to really... You know, they did it solely for themselves, and they had their own sound, and they didn't ever budge in terms of radio and stuff. I mean, now, you know, they're big and they made it, so they're going to be AOR, but we're from the Bay Area, so I grew up and I saw the whole thing, you know, the rise of the whole thrash metal scene in the Bay Area and all that. And it's really cool because I even myself sometimes doubted, God, how, you know, a band with this such a hardcore sound, how could they ever really be successful? And it's just like they proved everybody wrong. They never, you know, got played on the radio, and they're like, I mean, they're the band that really... from the roots, just stuck with what they did and proved everybody wrong, like I said, and never really changed just to please the radio people or the record people. They just kept their own thing going, and now they're like the biggest band in America.
Ugly Kid Joe guitarist Klaus Eichstätt talking about his favorite band, Metallica. Now, off Ugly Kid Joe's debut EP, As Ugly As They Want to Be, here's Everything About You.
I didn't even have a website when we started this thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like what was it? Back in October. That's when we started.
Wow.
So you're jumping in headfirst into the whole revolution of social media. So should we expect you to be dancing on TikTok any day now?
That probably won't happen. I have a feeling that it's not going to happen. It's just a guess, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, every time I think of doing a Decibel Geek TikTok account, I'm like, I'm in my 40s. I can't do that.
My 70s, and I ain't fucking doing that. So there.
If you go on TikTok and dance, I'll do it.
Okay, you got a deal.
Okay, but you have to do it first.
You're safe.
Oh, man. Well, this has been a lot of fun. But yeah. Oh, yeah. We mentioned Vinnie Vincent earlier. We're both giant Kiss nerds. Is there any particular stories or memories of the times you've had the guys in the band on the show?
I don't know. Well, hold on. Let's see. I have to get on my Brandvold hat. How's that?
Oh, boy.
Is that a look? My Michael Brandvold talk about Kiss hat? Well, actually, it's my Metal Shop hat. Yeah. But
you can take that off.
Nothing I can tell.
Aw.
I can't. Every story I've got is about Gene, and it involves women, and it involves drugs, and I'm not. I can't.
Involves drugs.
Gene was there. Wherever Gene is, someone's following him around to take care of the girls and the disc jockeys. Trust me.
Yeah.
Wow. I know.
We talking a little payola happening back in the day?
It wasn't payola. They gave me some of theirs. I gave them some of mine. It, you know.
Mutually beneficial.
You know, always shared or paid for. You know, I was really careful about that because I noticed that if something was around and something happened, there would be a group of record promoters who would always, you know, go, hey, could you do me a favor? What do you mean a favor? Well, I just need you to report that as an ad. You don't have to play it. No. So I tried to keep the scales balanced, you know, from then on. And that was really about 1970.
I'll bet you had a lot of people trying to grease your palm.
Oh, God, yeah. I've been offered, you know, stacks of cash. And I'm going to go there. And thank God I'm not in jail yet.
You probably got some amazing concert tickets out of the deal, though.
Oh, the best. The best. But remember, most of the shows from the mid-70s on were with radio stations.
Right.
The individual concert promoters who weren't all a part of, you know, Live Nation, they actually had their own concert business in their own town, they would trade advertising for tickets. So we got 100 tickets for Yes, and they got a bunch of commercials on the radio, you know, and it worked out great. My favorite that I remember doing that we actually got front row seats was Alice Cooper, the Welcome to My Nightmare tour, with Hunter and Wagner on guitars at Boston Garden.
Wow.
Jesus, they kicked ass. Best concert I've ever seen. Hunter and Wagner were like on fire. And Alice just dancing around his, you know, little thing in the middle there with a guillotine. And they're on each side of him blowing out flames. That was one of the best shows I've ever seen. It was fantastic. And Alice has always been there. He was, I would say, about our third or fourth guest was Alice Cooper. He was the first rock star I ever met. 1970, I come out of the Navy. I go to WNAP in Indianapolis. And it's Jethro Tull with Alice Cooper opening at some National Guard armory in Indianapolis. And the afternoon of the show, Warner Brothers had a little gathering over at the hotel, which was right across the street from where the radio station was. So we go up there, there's a big round table. Alice has got the snake crawling around on the big round table. And I guess there's 20 people there. I did look at him and I said, you realize that where I grew up, all the snakes were moccasins and were poisonous. He goes, aren't they all? And I go, wow. I got this guy figured out. I got it. So he's been cool. And he came and did the show on Metal Shop when nobody else was there yet. You know, we managed to, it took a lot of talking, but to get Quiet Riot to get there. Cause you know, they wanted to do it a whole nother way, but they saw what could be a good thing with Metal Shop, and it turned out good. The thing with Alice was in 2002, I think it was, two or three, right after 9/11, Alice's show, his nighttime radio show, was an idea. And one of the guys I was working with was producing it, and he says, come back in tonight, you know, at like 8 o'clock. I come in, Alice Cooper's there, and we got to produce a demo for Alice's show. You know, and I'm like, I'm producing Alice Cooper. This is cool.
Yeah.
But he was great. Everything I told him, everything I fed him, and he was feeling kind of unsure. And I looked at him and I said, we haven't said anything, and I know you probably don't remember me, but you did my show Metal Shop. You were the first guest host. You hosted a Halloween special, and you were fucking fantastic. Do that, and you're guaranteed hit. He went, oh, yeah, I remember you. I got it, and he had it. From then on, he was there. So that was fun to be a part of.
Man, awesome. That is amazing.
Yeah, he's a good guy. You know, we did a bunch of stuff with him when I was working in Phoenix. It was great.
Right on. Love Alice Cooper. Amazing live, too. Yeah, I'm very, very jealous you got to see Hunter and Wagner play on that tour. That's amazing.
From the front row.
They were the same with Lou Reed.
Yeah.
I got to see him with Lou, too, and that was rock and roll animal. I mean, it was awesome.
Yeah, we got close to Dick Wagner towards the end of his life. Got to do a couple of really good interviews with him, and a very sweet man. But God, the talent on that guy, just some of the most amazing guitar playing you'll ever hear.
Yeah, they were both, you know, in the Zakk Wylde, you know, over the top category. I mean, it's astounding, and it's amazing what happens with guys who are that good that it all ends up being, you know, jukebox hero, you know.
Right.
Johnny died with his guitar and a bottle of whiskey in his hand. You know, it's awful. It's a terrible thing. Yeah. And I could have been me, but I got free.
You know, it looks like Corey's got everything full steam ahead with the show. And I want to remind people one more time before where you can check out the show, because I know everyone's going to be asking, and you're not going to look into the show notes like I've told you to do already, and you're just going to ask me. So let me save you the time. You're still going to ask me after I say it here, but let's do it anyway.
All the locations are on charliekendall.com.
There you go.
That makes my life so much easier. Go to charliekendall.com and you've got it.
I mean, there's the sheet that you're reading from is right there. And I tell everybody when I'm posting, you know, print out a copy, put it on your fridge.
Right. And so if you're listening to this and you're about Chris and I's age, then you know exactly what we're talking about when we're talking about Metal Shop. And if you're a little bit younger than us, maybe you don't know, but there's some episodes that are available on YouTube that you can check out
for free.
And you will know that this thing had a huge impact on the rock and rollers of that era in a lot of the same way as radio did back when it was good. And in a lot of the same ways that when the Headbangers Ball on MTV was a thing,
yep.
When hard rock and metal ruled the freaking world, man, we looked to Charlie Kendall and we looked to Metal Shop to keep us up to date on all the things going on. And man, Charlie, I love you, man. I just got to tell you, I'm blown away that we're talking to you here today. It's awesome. And I'm so happy that Metal Shop is back. I wish it never had to go away to begin with.
Well, thank you. It's good to be back.
It's an honor to talk to you. And one last thing, and this is me being goofy. I always thought your voice bared a striking resemblance to the guy that did the voiceover work on the TV show Cheaters. Do you remember the show Cheaters?
No, I don't.
It was a show that was about like surveillance cameras following around cheating couples. Or people cheating on their spouses.
I remember the guy that used to come on at like 2 a.m.
Yeah. And the guy that did the voiceover, I always thought, I was like, that sounds like the Charlie from Metal Shop. And then I'm scouring through your thing. I'm like, no, it's not him.
No.
But can you do me a quick favor and just say, up next, the confrontation.
Up next, the confrontation.
He sounds just like
that. I hear it now. Crazy.
Oh. Thank you for letting me do that to you real quick. But that's so awesome. So we'll have the link. We'll have the link to Charlie's website, Metal Shop. We'll keep promoting the weekly show through the Decibel Geek page because we want to see this thing take off. Because
yeah.
It's like an old friend coming back. We just love it.
Thank you.
And you know, Charlie, we don't never ask anybody to do this, but since we got you here, I'm going to ask. Can you give us a Decibel Geek outro on this episode?
This is Charlie Kendall from Metal Shop, and you've been listening to the Decibel Geek podcast.
I love it. Thank you, Charlie.
Awesome.
Let's take a look at next week's edition of Metal Shop. The world premieres keep on coming, and next week, Metal Shop walks the razor's edge with AC/DC. Just
AC/DC are back with their first album in 3 years, and these bad boys are boogieing harder than ever. We'll talk with frontman Brian Johnson and guitar maniac Angus Young about the making of the LP, new drummer Chris Slade, and the return of guitarist Malcolm Young. Plus, you'll hear cuts from The Razor's Edge. It's another Metal Shop world premiere blockbuster with AC/DC. Next week on
Metal Shop.
The only show with teeth. Metal Shop is brought to you by the U.S. Army, a place to be all you can be. And by new Jumpin' Jack cheese-flavored Doritos brand tortilla chips. Doritos knows jack about cheese.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.